Welcome, dear listeners and fellow K-drama lovers, to your favorite critical K-drama podcast, the K-drama Fairy Tale Podcast, with me, Sally, and my lovely and brilliant co-host, Maksu. In this episode, we are discussing the classic action drama, the K2. We talk about topics such as the privatization of warfare and the role of private military contractors in Iraq, about Catholicism and very cool futuristic AI computers. But also, there's a lot of swooning over Ji Chang-wook in the shower, obviously. Enjoy, everyone! Welcome, everyone!
Welcome! Hello!
Hello!
To our newest episode.
Newest episode!
Which is on the kind of classic older drama K2 from 2016.
Like in my head, 2016 like doesn't seem that long ago, but actually it's like what, 7 years already?
Like a long time.
Okay, yeah, but so I guess it's one of those classic action dramas, mm-hmm. right? So,
with the same actor though, because he played in like a few dramas, I think Hila and
Hila
and Ji Chang-wook. Iris and also this one.
Yeah, it's his like I think like he definitely likes this type of drama, it seems. And he's well equipped, I think, to play the action hero.
Think we just before we were preparing the episode, we were talking about it, but it was in my early phase of watching K drama, and I really liked him as an actor, I think, at the time, and this action genre, plus romance, of course. But
100%, like the first time I've seen him.
Of City Hunter. City Hunter was my first K drama ever, kind of similar, right? I mean, with the
yeah, I think my first like proper action drama and also the first drama where I encountered Ji Chang-wook was Hila, which is like quite similar
to
K2. Which
is also really good, yeah.
And I couldn't believe how good looking he was. Like, he's hot. Like, honestly, he's very, very hot. He's very good looking.
I wonder what he is doing now, like if he still stick to this kind of action role or if he went to normal.
That's a very good question. I don't know. Something like maybe some of our listeners can like enlighten us. And, where's Ji Chang-wook now? Gosh, maybe we should start following him.
Yeah.
On Twitter or something. Then we'll be more up to date.
Unfortunately, not so many K-pop idols, K-drama idols are on Twitter.
They're more on Instagram and stuff, right?
Probably, yeah. Or their agency sometimes does it for them, but not they don't tweet themselves.
Yeah, of course, because otherwise, you gotta control that image. It's important. Yes.
Yeah, I think the only one that I sometimes see on Twitter is Park Bo Gum.
Oh,
when he has some new model contract or something.
Oh, yeah,
they post some pictures. It must also be the agency though. Well, anyways, I think you are going to give a short recap of the drama.
Okay, I'm trying to give a super short recap so we can dive into the interesting stuff. Basically, we have this guy called, well, let's just call him Ji Chang-wook because that's who he is.
K2, Jiha, right? Jiha. I think his name is K2.
K2, yeah. I mean, later on he gets the name K2, but as a code name. But let's call him K2. So there's this guy, K2. We encounter him. He's like clearly being chased, running away in Madrid, somewhere in Spain. There's this girl that runs around in a nightgown and is barefoot for some reason.
They
running through the city.
I think that's a bit chased. Too long for the recap part.
Wait. Being chased by like some Spanish, people like with guns. And so then he's like, oh no, like I've got my own shit going on.
She looks like Korean, I have to help her. But I can't.
Yeah, can't get involved in this. But then obviously he just, you know, can't hold himself back and help himself. And so he kind of saves her, but then also doesn't really save her, because then he runs away and she gets snatched up by the Spanish police, which are apparently policemen, it turns out. And so that's also a lot of like dodgy questions. But anyways,
there was a photograph taken of her, right, under refuge, or was that later?
Oh yeah, I mean, then, because, you know, there's a photograph taken of her by like a like very famous Spanish design person.
Or some like, influencers as well who promote her then.
Well, it's especially this designer who like posts about her and is like, oh my god, this is my new muse, like a barefoot girl in a
in a nightgown
who looks seriously abused and confused, but oh my god, that's my muse, this is so amazing. I'm like, okay, that's a bit too
not
much
like
cocaine,
not like any other model.
Well, that's the thing, like there's like any model in that. Anyways, but so going back to the very short, very brief recap of the K2, we have K2 who's like coming back to Korea. He's like public enemy number one, so he's can't, so he has to stay hidden basically. Mm-hmm. And then the girl we encountered in Spain is called Anna, and she's basically the secret daughter of a like secret daughter of another mother from this politician guy who wants to run for presidency, and his wife, her stepmother. Is also kind of the daughter of like a very rich like chaebol group. And her whole goal is to make her husband president, and she, and for her, Anna is like this massive Achilles heel, because if it were to, you know, become public,
that it's not.
Yeah, if it were to become public that her husband, and in their marriage there has been like a birth of a child out of wedlock, then that would be a massive scandal, and everything she has worked for would, you know, amount to nothing.
I think it's also to kind of blackmail the husband, right, into staying loyal to her, basically, because the husband seems to have more feelings for the daughter than for her, and kind of just uses her.
Yeah. And I wonder whether, like the stepmother, she's basically using her husband to become president, but really I think she wants to be the one in power, and she'll be the one pulling the strings because she has power over him. So it's basically all a big ploy of like becoming like the super powerful woman, whatever.
Yeah.
But she's very bitter because her husband is actually very like unfaithful in quotation marks, so he has like sex with lots of prostitutes and like whoever's willing, it seems like and is not really interested in her, and they have a very kind of business-like arrangement in their relationship, but obviously to the outside they need to display like a, you know, the
good
perfect
couple image.
La-di-da-di-da.
But in the first episode, then Cheha, for some reason, storms into the house, and then she gets to know him. She hires him as a service bodyguard, basically, I think, in her security company that she also runs.
Yeah.
And he becomes very important to her, saves her life, then becomes also a member of the core team and has access to this AI computer, and
Cloud.
Is like a very important person now in this whole security surveillance team. And they kind of make a pact that she helps him with his revenge, and he helps her with getting back on the other president candidate, who then
by coincidence
is the same enemy, basically.
Exactly. Yeah, by coincidence, the arch nemesis of the stepmother is a guy who is also the arch nemesis of K2, because K2 used to work as a mercenary in Iraq for a company called BlackRock, which clearly refers to, I guess, like the very infamous mercenary company Blackwater in Iraq that actually operates in Iraq. And this guy was basically killed his fiance, who was like an Iraqi refugee, in front of his eyes, and then framed him, more or less in front of his eyes.
Yeah.
But then framed him for her murder.
That's why he is also searched for, yeah, wanted.
And that's why, like, he basically wants revenge on this presidential candidate who's like a corrupt asshole. And basically, yeah, the stepmother gives him the chance to do that whilst also protecting Anna. So he is also, that's the other thing, the other plot line is that because this designer dude posted his muse image of Anna, like, online, she was like, oh my god, she's not, like, safe and hidden in Madrid anymore. She's going to come to Korea until the presidential race is over, where I can, like, take her close and, like, safe from the public, la-di-da-di-da.
I think that was not a very wise decision of Choi Yoo-jin.
Nah, I don't think so.
Honestly, like, because in Korea, the other candidate, and if other people find out about it, it's basically over.
It's very silly. And also, I think, like, who cares about, like, an image, like, posted by a person? Like, it's like, I mean, social media is very, very forgetful.
A few weeks. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So it was a bit weird.
She could have had a good life in the monastery and
barefoot in her nightgown. What the fuck? Like, honestly, I think it's really... Anyway, sorry. Let me just finish quickly this recap. And then the whole romance part of this action thriller about corrupt politicians and la-di-da-di-da is between Anna, the secretive daughter, and K2, her bodyguard. So we've got a bit
It's like many, I think, main themes, like bodyguard and how to say this this bodyguard movie, I think it's
exactly
movie, but also some resemblance to what was the other the tale that we were talking about.
We'll
talk about more later with the stepmom and stepdaughter relationship.
But yeah, right. I think it's this very classic bodyguard and the woman that's being protected kind of dynamic of, actually, you know. Although it's also very creepy because his job is to basically watch her 24/7 on CCTV. And then somehow they spin that into like a romantic, it's so cute. He just watches
because he cooks for her and does stuff for her.
I know, but like, I think it just has major stalking, like stalker vibes. And I think,
but isn't that the whole point about bodyguards? I mean, like bodyguards.
I know, but I mean, she's basically a prisoner in that house, right?
Yeah.
I mean, she doesn't really want to be there and she only comes out at night and like whatnot. I mean.
Yeah, in the beginning, it's quite. How to say, prison-like situation, but it gets better later on.
Anyways.
The uncle, I think, right? Or the brother of her takes, of Taeyujin takes some kind of responsibility of her and also uses her as a weapon against Taeyujin, etc. We don't have to go into the details, but then she also can enjoy some, you know,
some freedom.
Amusement park or whatever, ice cream incidents.
Oh god, the ice cream incident. That was very dramatic because like at some point then K2 brings her strawberry ice cream and pretends that it was from her dad. But
she was waiting for the dad.
Yeah, she was waiting for the dad, but then only K2 shows up and then brings her strawberry ice cream. And your dad said I should bring you this ice cream. And then she said, really? My dad said that? It's like he said, yeah. And then she ate it and it turns out, oh my god, she's allergic to strawberries. Like, oh my god, that dramatic.
But she still ate it
and
because
she still
thought
ate.
It was from her
if
dad.
My daddy sent this, I need to eat it. He wants me to be dead. I thought it was stupid. And then K2 is very upset because he can't like bring her to the hospital.
Yes. So I mean, it's all a bit like too dramatic. I mean, she doesn't need to eat this ice ice cream.
Yeah, she shouldn't have like eaten it in the first place. But yeah. Hey, I mean, you know,
they had a fun day, right? Didn't they? I don't know. No, he was just watching her in secret. I don't know. I thought they were in the amusement park together.
90% of the drama he watches it in secret.
Playing with cats.
But I mean, like, what I really appreciated was there was one scene that I really liked where basically when K2 gets hired by the private security company of the stepmother, like all the other security employees are kind of upset with that because they fought him before. And they are thinking, well, you know, who's this guy who just like comes up here and gets like to be already quite high in the ranks? And then he goes into the
shower.
And they
have a cool shower fighting scene. Yeah,
exactly. So like, that's a very, I really like that scene.
Funny scene.
Because then you've got like this situation where you have like 10 naked, so everyone's naked. And then there's like 10 or 15 guys against Ji Chang-wook, and he just like completely erases them without any effort at all.
With towel swinging and soap slippery.
Flicking.
Whatever.
And when the scene started, I braced myself for some like violence, but then it was actually quite funny the way...
Mm. Yeah, I think there are some comedic scenes.
Yeah. I think like the whole drama also rests on the premise that K2 is completely invincible.
Yes, you already know that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, from the beginning.
So nothing can, yeah.
But it's the same with the other dramas like City Hunter, you know. City Hunter is shot in the back, falls from the roof, but still alive.
Easy.
For a moment, you would think like, oh, maybe he died now. But wakes up in the hospital the next day. And there were a few moments where you thought maybe K2 was severely hurt, right? But it wouldn't be a K-drama if he died.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is very true. I mean, other like, you know, side characters can die here and there, maybe.
Not the main one.
Not the main ones, no, for sure not. But so should we talk a bit about, it's quite interesting that, we were thinking that the whole setup of the drama really has a lot of parallels with the fairy tale Snow White, because we have, you know, the evil stepmother, we even have an AI system called Mirror,
yes.
And you know, and Snow White goes, "Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the most beautiful of them all?" That's the stepmother. And also in Snow White, the stepmother kind of bans the child. Well, she thought actually she was killed, but you know, she bans the child.
We have many other tales, right? Classical tales also with stepmother and stepdaughter relationship. And I think in these classical tales, the stepmother is always the evil one.
Super evil.
And here I think in the beginning we really see Tae-yujin as the main evil antagonist. But at the end you kind of get to like her more. And I think that's also a good twist of how they changed this classical tale into a more modern drama, right?
Yeah.
Because she... is doing it for the husband in certain way. I mean, of course, she wants power too, but it's kind of out of love for the husband too, I guess. And for the daughter, or like for K2, at least, she also develops some kind of feelings.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she is hot for him. I mean, honestly, like as soon as he kind of saves her and carries her out, she's like, yeah.
So, 100%. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, but we kind of get to like her more, and especially when she fights the other evil, corrupt people. She herself is, of course, also evil, but then the other people seem more evil, right?
That is very true.
The uncle or the brother or other related
and I think
people in this conglomerate. Kind of everyone tries to trick her and get more money out of it.
Yeah.
And I think she seems to be like following her father's wishes and more.
Yeah, I think that's an important point, like that basically through the drama, like in the beginning we think of, oh, you know, she's just evil, but actually through the drama we learn that she's kind of a, you know, also a victim of her circumstances in terms of where she was born and, like, you know,
everyone around her. In this competitive Cheboy family where everyone wants power and
exactly
money.
And then you just probably have to change and become like this in order to survive, blah, 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 kind of thing. And then also, I mean, she really also had a rough time with the husband, because that's also, when I read fairy tales as a child, I also always wondered, but what about the father? Because there's so many evil stepmothers.
It's true, yeah.
And they're like in Hansel and Gretel.
Hansel and Gretel, yeah, that was also one that I was reminded. And there the father is kind of coming up a bit, but they always help the stepmother.
Yeah, they're always siding with the stepmother. There's no solidarity with the children, and you always think, like, but why are the children then more upset with the stepmother than with their own dad? Like, there's always a bit of a, you know, the father is kind of less in focus, and it's like always the evil women that evil. But yeah, and then I think also in this drama, we have a bit the dynamic of, oh, the father not really, you know, being portrayed well. I don't know, at least by Anna, the daughter, she always kind of still idealizes him and is like, oh, you know, it's just my stepmother who keeps him away from me.
Yes.
But actually,
throughout the drama, she kind of learns also that the father is very focused on his career. And think with the ice cream incident and where he doesn't show up to certain, you know, appointments and also tries to trick her a little bit.
Yeah.
She kind of notices that he's not on her side.
Yeah. And then, for example, when she's in Korea and then she goes purposefully to a church disguised as a nun, where she knows that her father will sit in the audience.
Ah, yes.
She starts singing this song, Amazing Grace. everybody starts crying. And I think she expected her father
to react to react this reveal.
Like, oh my God, it's my long lost daughter. Blah, blah, blah. The way he reacts is like, what the fuck is she doing here? Like, get her away from here. I don't want to see her. And then I think it's slowly the...
Yeah, that's a more earlier scene than the ice cream thing, I think. Yeah, true.
Yeah.
That brings us to the other topic, the Catholicism part, with here and there nuns showing up right in the beginning.
Yeah.
And the monastery that she was held in prison.
In prison, yeah. I think that
why would the nuns be a part of this? I mean, did they get money or something for her?
It's a very strange. Yeah, I also how did she learn Korean when she was in Spain all her life? Like,
yeah, she came there when she was 6, right?
Okay, yeah, so maybe she still knew Korean, but probably.
Yeah, it's a bit unrealistic that she.
And then also I thought, like, the way she, like, her running away scenes and then being chased by, why would she be chased by the Spanish police? Like, why would they enforce something like that? Like, bring her back to the
close connection of religion and the state. Very apparent here. No, and maybe then, we don't know exactly, but maybe she was also labeled as like mentally ill or something. Like, I was thinking that maybe that they said she has depression or she has some anxiety issues. Oh, of course, she had some anxiety issues with the flashlights and this kind of stuff. So, that's why maybe she was there in some. It's not a therapy, of course, but maybe they sent her there too.
Yeah,
and then she was.
But also the idea that, you know, like, you can just send any child to a monastery. Like, that's what monasteries do. Like, no, that's not what monasteries do. Like, if you visit a monastery somewhere, that's like usually a group of 5 very old, like, nuns or monks. and they do, you know, they pray, they do their stuff, but they're not an orphanage. Like, you can't drop your children
not
there.
For single, like, child like this.
Single children, no. Like, if there's, like, orphanages, I think, are very much part of a state institution, you know, system. And, you know, there might be, like, some that are run by the Catholic Church, but they wouldn't be run exclusively by nuns in the monastery.
It used to be like that in the medieval times. Maybe there was some kind of confusion about that.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, but anyways, still later on, I think also her belief in Catholic religion still goes on, right, in Korea as well.
Yeah, that's true.
It seems.
And actually, like a friend of mine, she's a curator for medieval manuscripts at the British Library. And she always gets very upset with the bad reputations that nuns get, especially in the Middle Ages. And she says that basically nuns were actually a lot of them were quite rebellious and quite amazing because they kind of chose to live in a all-female community and didn't have to marry and do the whole kind of children and men subservient thing. And they rather chose to live in kind of self-sufficient communities and like dedicate their life to art or dedicate their life to, you know, whatever it is.
God,
you know, whatever. Yeah. Mm. And I think
it's true. Interesting interpretation. And yeah, I also don't know how it changed in like modern times, because they can, right? They can go outside. It's not that they have to stick to the they can also study and do other things at the same time.
Yeah, definitely.
There's a Catholic university in Korea where I think mostly nuns are studying, but also other students.
Really?
Catholics,
no, I didn't
probably.
Know that.
Oh, and it's not a religious, so you can study other majors there too, not only theology.
Gosh.
Anyways.
But yeah, Catholics. You know, I was born Catholic, so I always feel a bit entitled to rage against them.
Did you also cry when the Pope died, the German Pope?
Honestly, this Pope, like Ratzinger, he was like, RIP, but firstly, I always thought he looked like a vampire or some sort of evil goblin.
In his
which
later
really
period.
He was, if you look at what he did in the church while he was in power. He's like a very reactionary conservative dighead who completely was complicit in a lot of abuse of children, systematic abuse. That he knew of
When he was a bishop. In Germany,
when he was a bishop. But I mean, clearly then, when you knew it when you were a bishop, you also know about it when you're a pope. Right?
Yeah,
and it all kind of kicked off while he was a pope and he didn't do like shit, honestly. So,
it was quite surprising that he was even elected to me at the time because he was so conservative and the church went into the... Right.
But see, that's the
wrong direction.
It's like all these like mad power games, like because the people who elect him are also all kind of conservative old dickheads who kind of somehow made their way up in a very
say too strong words about the you know for our Catholic listeners.
Oh well, you know, but I'm also Catholic, so I feel I can rightly say so. And you know, anyone who disagrees, they may disagree, but that's
course.
Just how I feel about it, and I will not shut up about it. It's true, honestly.
We're calling the Holy Pope a dickhead.
Sorry. I mean, the current one I like much better. Like, not that I like the institution in itself and like what it has done and what, you know, crimes it has committed over many, many years. But, you know, if there has to be a pope, I think Francis is definitely like a better one than Ratzinger was.
Well, I'm looking forward to the reveals of certain secrets that his secretary and a lot of people are planning to publish, right? So,
yeah, well, you know, his secretary, Genswein, he comes from the Black Forest, which is where I'm from. And he was titled like the best looking cardinal there was. So he was like the most sexy priest there ever was in the Vatican. Yeah. That there's several articles about him apparently. And then yeah, he was like the closest, super close with Ratzinger. Like they were.
But why is he going to reveal these secrets? I mean, that's not the story of our podcast, but okay.
Good question. Yeah, I don't know, but you know, there might be like, I mean,
some other power games.
Well, the thing is that like, I think there is a bit of bad blood between Genswein, the private secretary, former private secretary of Ratzinger, Benedict, and Francis, Pope Francis. Because
yeah.
Pope Francis, as soon as he became Pope, demoted Genswein. So Genswein then ended up to just being private secretary.
Too bad.
Yeah, no. And did you know, sorry, last fun fact about dead popes, but did you know when a pope dies that the like that all that weird ceremony of like them being like carried around and
in the public display of the corpse, and, yeah, that was very surprising.
Yeah, and he looks really creepy. I mean, did you see that?
Because it was before, like, I think when the last pope died, there was no social media, so that this wasn't spread all over the Twitter and other.
Yeah, I think it's
and no one took photos of it.
It's very creepy. And then they take a hammer and three times knock on the forehead of the dead pope, like to double check that he's actually dead.
Yeah, it is from the medieval times because at that time some people were buried while they were not dead yet.
Yeah, that's also not great.
I read about it.
Oh god, woo!
It's so called Scheintod.
Yeah, it's all quite creepy. But yeah, okay. So this just a little excuse on Catholicism.
Yeah, well, we liked all the scene when she was singing "Amazing Grace." Of course, she is a good singer. If she was singing it herself,
yeah,
we know her from Girls' Generation.
which my favorite song of is "Genie."
Which one is of their earlier songs? Yes.
Yeah, and it was like a. The song that was part of
performed
the drama
in Dream High.
Yeah.
Right. That was a really cool song.
It's a really good song. Yeah, that's why I really
and
like it.
And the performance of Kim Soo Hyun.
Yeah, it was so cool.
Dancing of Taekyeon.
No, so yeah. Yeah, but I think other than that, I wasn't very convinced by the performance of Anna or. What's her
no,
name?
I agree. Yeah, because
Yuna.
She was Yuna, Yuna as an actress, you mean.
Yeah. But I think also, to be honest, I don't tend to like characters, female lead characters that are too passive. And her character was, you know, obviously she was like, oh no, I want to know about my mom's death and so on.
Yeah, it was a bit connected to her character that she had to play a prisoner, basically.
Exactly.
Right? And just a pretty girl, just a model. And later she was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think I was just a bit annoyed with her, like, actions of her character. So.
Yeah, in the end, maybe some episodes that you didn't, that you skipped a little, that she becomes more. Antagonist
proactive.
To Eugene because the uncle takes care of her a bit and then supports her, and she uses that power, that new power over Eugene, kind of to get back at her. But
isn't the uncle also like really evil?
Yeah, yeah. But she knows. I think she knows that later on. Yeah. She. The problem is, I think that she really has to in her character has to find her way back into society. Because she was so secluded. Yeah, from everyone, and she was in Spain, she wasn't even in Korea, so she's not used to every but I think it's quite natural then when she starts more interacting more with also the staff members in the house, in her safe house.
Yeah, Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah, and with
Oh, they're my family. Like, yeah, also they keep you a hostage, but yeah, sure. They're your family. They are just there because they love you, not because they get paid.
Yeah.
So,
well, then the whole romance would be a bit problematic, though, because even also Cheha himself is not there for romance, you know, in the first place.
That is very true.
And he has his other love, right? His big Iranian love he wanted to save as well. Iraqi.
Let's talk about just, can I just say, how problematic it is that the hero of this story is a mercenary that worked in Iraq, which we even see, yes, and he's portrayed as this cool person, like, running through the desert, like, with his, like, armored vehicles, and then falling in love with a supposedly Iraqi refugee.
Local? No, but she's also a translator, though.
Yeah, she's also a translator of her
people. She speaks
people.
Korean and...
Yeah. She probably watched a lot of K-dramas.
And they communicate a little bit in Korean.
But obviously, the Iraqi refugee clearly is played by a blonde, blue-eyed American actress.
Yeah, at first you can just see the blonde, the blue eyes of because she was.
Nah, K2 proposes to her to marry him and come with him to Korea,
she takes off her
headscarf and is like, "Oh my god, yes, I marry you. Now you can see my hair." And it's like, that's not how it works. But okay.
That was just to show that she's very pretty. Like that.
And then he was like, "Oh my god, she's so beautiful. Let me kiss you."
Because it was more like that he wanted to marry her to get her a visa. I think it was more like a pity marriage that he proposed.
Well,
and then when she takes off the hijab, then it's a bit like, oh, okay, that was a good catch.
She's kind of hot.
Is even more like lower level. Motivation of Cheha in a sense that he doesn't even have any feelings for her in the beginning. I think
I found it very, very, very
like
cringy.
Wants to save her or some like savior complex.
Yeah, very, very cringy. And then
and his savior complex in the sense is like also coming up again with Anna, because it's also she is in a bad position in her life and
he just
wants
can't
to
help
save
himself.
Her,
yeah.
Of course.
He
yeah.
just has to. He can't help himself. But and so while he was in Iraq, he like sees this other corrupt politician, Korean politician, like doing some dodgy deals. And
with weapons, I suppose.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, arms deals. And then he has the translator shot because nobody may know about
should
this.
Ever know. Yeah.
Nobody can know about this deal. and then Ji Chang-wook is like really, really upset. And it's like, oh my god, how can they? And then he's framed for a murder. And so I think it's really interesting, how he's kind of portrayed as it's like a normal thing to be a mercenary in like one of the worst wars with like shit tons of war crimes that were committed by private military contractors. And interestingly,
do you know what their role is though with like the you could tell us a bit more maybe do you know any connection also to Korea or like to private politicians? Why do they try to sell weapons to them?
It's like with any war, there's a lot of profit to be made. So, for example, with especially the Iraq War was one of the first wars where privatization of warfare was like that popular and that extreme. So privatization meaning the process of like turning public services that would usually be done by the army or the military, the national military, over to private for-profit corporations. So in the end, you have people acting there, not on behalf of a, you know,
of a state and government, for their government.
For their government, which are, yeah, but they are there as a business thing for money, for profit. And that is has like very serious implications because obviously war, as a lot of other things internationally, are governed by and are, you know, subject to a lot of international treaties and oversight and all sorts of things, while private contractors are not. So it's a very, like, terrible, and also that's in Iraq, was quite, there were like a lot of war crimes committed by private military contractors such as Blackwater, Dynamo Corps. Like there were over 130,000 private military contractors in Iraq that had no oversight whatsoever, that were not bound really by any treaties, that couldn't be really...
But were they not? Were they working for the US government?
And they were working and contracted by the US government for, I think, between 2003 and 2007, the US government spent $85 billion on private military contractors in Iraq. That is like the entire GDP of Iraq of the year 2007, for example. So it's like astronomical.
It's like a really
amount
big
of money.
Yeah, I always thought there were many like US troops there stationed as well.
The majority were
actually private
military contractors, and it's like
and one they of the were biggest... fighting like terrorism or what?
Well, supposedly, so they were usually used as security, like to keep like American officials and diplomats safe. Quotation marks. But they
and
were
and the
also,
companies also to
well exactly and a lot of for-profit companies exactly. So
it reminds me a lot of Descendants of the Sun, where we had a similar but there it was Korea and Korean military,
yeah,
but also with this profit connected, and yeah, that there were some companies, Korean companies also there
with the
to
energy companies
build up
also,
the
yeah
energy.
Exactly.
And that there was a hospital dispatching there, doctors there.
Yeah.
The whole machinery of war and money connected again.
Yeah. And the thing is also like all these kind of mercenary like groups in Iraq, a lot of them, so it's also quite perfidious, because you basically have them, a lot of them recruited, for example, ex-military men from military dictatorships in Southern America, and sent them over to Iraq to send. So it's kind of taking advantage of very poor people who don't have a lot of choice of how they make money. And then they get sent over to Iraq to fight for, you know, a tiny, like a fraction of what an American soldier gets paid.
Yeah,
in the same position.
It's like outsourcing of their own, like basically.
Exactly.
It's cheaper.
Yeah. So while an American employee of Blackwater would, or like some company would be paid $1,000 per day, somebody from Chile would be paid $40 per day or something. So it's also within those PMCs, it's quite racialized.
Do you remember in Descendants of the Sun, there have also been some mercenary, but because there was the actual military and the mercenaries, it was always a bit portrayed as actual military is much better. They fight for their fatherland, you know, they fight for their home country, while the mercenaries are really bad and just for the money.
Yeah.
Because there was this American colleague of the
exactly
main
who used to be
guy who
used to be a soldier, but then he came.
I'm just reminded of this.
Like, no, just it's
when
it's,
you were telling this story.
It's very true. And but the thing is, like, a lot of kind of ex Navy SEALs or ex kind of soldiers, they set up these private military contractors or like ex CIA people.
Oh yeah, they are probably in higher positions, and then
yeah, and they kind of make these companies. They have the connections to the Pentagon, to wherever you need in order to get the contracts. And that's then how they make their money. And also you have basically like, yeah, but I think like the main problem of the privatization of warfare is that basically you have all these private companies, or a very famous private military contractor in Ukraine, for example, it's a Russian one called the Wagner Group. But they've also been operating in Syria. So it's a very like popular and like very common thing these days to, as a government, to use these private military contractors in order to influence or go into certain war zones, but without having to engage in any big diplomacy about it.
Yeah, so yeah, of course.
You can basically...
Because you don't have to have an ally who sends their troops, but you can just hire them.
Yeah, and you're not bound by any international like treaties or anything. Not that, you know, not that under international law.
Not that war is actually part of...
Yeah, so like, you know, the US Army has done a lot of damage also without private military contractors. But it's at least, you know, there was some sense of oversight maybe, or some sense of, you know, you can actually court-martial a soldier if something happens.
I think also the problem is the people who are working there, like some of them might be exploited, but some of them might also just find it entertaining or like as a pleasure to work in the war zone, and 100%. They might be like psychopaths who are like obsessed with weapons, something like
definitely.
That. This is like a psychological effects of being constantly in war. You know, I think that is also very harmful for people's mind, and you don't know if they are still operating on full.
They're complete nutheads, and they don't have like any like scruples. Like they are like witnesses, like stories of like PMCs of Blackwater, for example, who like talked about going over to Iraq and killing Iraqis as like a sport. And there have been like plenty of incidents where, you know, like ranging from torture to rape to all sorts of like anything really like you can imagine like has happened.
I think when
without
K2,
any consequences.
Coming back to K2, I think it's also a little bit seen in his portrayal as in the beginning, this kind of also merciless fighter who doesn't care about anyone except for his profit as well, or as his agenda.
Mm.
So yeah, that's why also the other colleagues of his later of his company are very critical, right?
I mean, what
but there has been a reason, I forgot the reason why he joined this BlackRock. Was it to make money, or was it to,
I guess,
because I think I remember that he was actually in the Korean military first, and then he was discharged for some reason and had to make money again.
So
and
I think that
former boss of him was working in this same company, right?
Yeah.
They knew each other.
So I think basically what happened, like he was like a Korean
soldier,
like you know, special ops, whatever. And then he got discharged dishonorably, got framed somehow, and that's why he then
had no choice and basically just going there.
I mean, you can't just work at Subway or something. You have to go to Iraq to be mercenary. Yes.
Well, there's no other job I can do.
Exactly. But yeah, so I think, and then in the end, in the very end, there's actually also a little scene where he's about to testify about probably the murder of his fiance in front of like three white American men.
That was
which
a
I
bit
think
strange.
Was kind of insinuating, oh yeah, he's getting justice, you know, for his.
Yeah, but was it like the international, like Den Haag Court of Justice
exactly,
or something? Or what
was American,
where was this?
So. I doubt there would be any justice there. So yeah, so I thought that was quite a, you know, it was a nice thought, but.
Yeah,
that's not really how
I mean, he can't get justice for her in Korea, of course, but there must be some place where actually could.
And the last thing I'm going to say about Blackwater is that it still operates. It like just rebranded itself after the Iraq War.
Mm.
It's now called XE, but it's still out there. You can like Google it, and it's also. The way it was founded was also part of like very conservative, ultra nationalist Christian scene in the US, and kind of how they got
so there's
to
also
power.
Some Christian connection here,
yeah,
but probably not Catholic.
No, like more evangelist crazy people.
I see. Well, we. Have a kind of unconnected topic. That's not a good way
segue.
To connect this. But the other topic we wanted to discuss a little bit is the AI computer.
Oh, yeah.
That was used by Choi Yu-jin most of the time to get all her information.
Yeah.
And we already know that Korea is a country where many CCTVs surveying the... public, and I think there has been a similar kind of drama where that was an issue. I forgot which one of these other action dramas where they also had this really good CCTV connection and they knew everything about everyone.
Yeah, I mean, in many dramas you get these cool hackers who can just like hack into anything, and then
hackers
like,
as well, but also,
also supercomputers.
That things like us is same with the military, I think, that they also outsourcing certain like surveillance technology because they probably the police or other public investigators use this technology of her or want to use it at some point, but also this company has access to it, and then in this case the boss, and she can just find out everything about anyone.
It's true. I kind of thought it was quite a cool thing, like this underground meeting room with the... And I like the voice of the mirror. It was like quite cool. And obviously it's also a bit like that fairy tale mirror who shows you whatever you want to see.
It's always with AI or with these kind of systems that you have to ask the right questions, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
But I guess for Choi Yu-jin or like the people who could use the AI later, also K2 is allowed to use it. They can get out the, because I think that is one of the last scene or like late scenes when K2 asks the AI a lot of questions. He talks with the AI for a very long time, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
But Choi Yu-jin also says that you have to reveal many things about yourself if you want to gain information.
Right.
So that's also an interesting like comparison there. That is probably true for other AI technology as well. You always have to feed them with your own thoughts in a sense, and they can later like use it again.
That is very
true.
Was
in this drama a bit touched upon, and I find it interesting looking at new AI developments, like
definitely. And
you probably
I think
heard about this one AI program that is
the chatbot
actually basically writing you papers and stuff.
I use that. It's quite good.
I heard it's good, for like easier essays or like for
I use it for emails. Write me an email where I say this but without offending people.
Sounds good.
It is quite good.
Can be useful.
Definitely. But also what I wanted to say, like regarding AI computers and CCTV and stuff, what also there's like a very close connection between military and big tech startups. So for example, in the case of Israel, you have a lot of kind of spyware that is kind of developed and sold by particularly soldiers who were in this particular unit in the military, who then after their service like go out and like have like these startups. And a few of these spyware products were actually quite controversial in the news. So for example, there was Pegasus, which was a program.
That was going to be used in also European countries, right?
Yeah, exactly, because the spyware kind of hacks phones easily, so you can just access any phones you want, and like a lot of authoritarian governments used it in order to track down journalists and like prosecute them and so on. So it was very controversial, and there was also apparently now a more recent startup where you could buy as a corporation or whoever you want, you know, because it's a private company, you can buy a product that lets you hack into CCTV and live edit the footage.
Oh, wow. so you can produce some new footage.
So there's like a lot of stuff out there that is all happening. And it must be with also kind of tacit.
I guess it's always close connected to military, because they want to be ahead of everyone else, develop the new technologies, and then the military also doesn't have any regulations. What this kind of research in universities would probably have, because they operate under very different, you know, security.
But a lot of military and armies, actually, or the Pentagon, they fund a lot of university research projects,
and the US problematic. Probably more.
Yeah, but also in like there's actually also quite a lot of like if you look into it, also in Germany, for example, a lot of kind of research projects are funded by the Pentagon or big like kind of arms corporations or stuff. So it's all
connected, really. Gosh.
Yes. Oh, well, we are kind of at the end, I guess. But do you have any memorable scene or dress or song that you want to...
I think...
You know, what, we were talking about the music a little bit. I think, some funny songs in this.
I actually don't remember the music. Tell me about the music. Was like
it was some kind of opera thing. That,
oh yes,
It was kind of music.
It was kind of classical song, but it was German, and it was some. But it was kind of a bit weird. It was about the forest and the wolf and the girl that runs away. So I think it was.
Okay. I don't know exactly.
It kind of gave a bit,
lyrics.
But it was quite epic. There was a lot was of also some epic kind of, classical.
I thought there
music.
Was some kind of Latin or something like that. So, but maybe I'm, mixing it up a bit.
It was very kind of epic.
Yeah, it was a bit
music.
Like oh
very
yeah,
dramatic.
This melody you think of K2 basically.
Definitely.
It was and memorable.
The only other. Thing that I thought was memorable was the last 5 minutes of the last episode. You have the super evil corrupt, you know, politician Park, who is then kind of driven by K2 to his end, where he was then forced to commit suicide by hanging himself at a tree. And I thought it was quite amazing because you see him as quite dramatic. Oh, I didn't know I'd die like this, like committing suicide. And you see the noose and his face like through the noose. And then cut, and we are in Subway. And it's like Anna eating a cookie at Subway, waiting for K2 to kind of ramble in. And I was like, this is like the most absurd, like, I don't know, transition.
Where else would you wait?
I was like, what the hell? And then they just eat, like Anna eats a cookie. And
then they go to Madrid.
And then they go to Madrid and make out. So
That was sounds great. Like a good lie.
So what was your favorite scene?
It was not really my favorite scene. It was like a bit random, though. We didn't talk about it much. That's why I wanted to mention it. With this runway that was like completely covered in water, where she had to go through with like her dress getting wet, and I found this quite funny. I don't know if you remember, but
I actually don't. What?
Okay. Well, and
why? So was it like a fashion kind of show?
Pursuing her, yeah, fashion career. She's very nervous and everything, and then she's on her first runway and she goes to the front, and then she makes this kind of speech about her mother because it was apparently some memorable fashion show for her mother, who was also a kind of fashion icon. Right. And I found this quite random, but also it made me think like, so what will be her job? Like, is she going to be a model? Like,
she'll be
is she going to be using her mother's image and all that? Because I think at some point she also got a lot of credit from her mother's past and her life. Like, not only from her father's.
It's true.
Right?
It's very true. Yeah.
So I wondered really what would... But then in the end, she obviously will inherit the company by Eugene and her father. Then she can just... settle down with this.
That is true. But then she decides to, like, you know, destroy everyone of the company. So she kind of, but you know, she's with K2. K2 probably like earned millions.
Will provide for her when going to the next war as a soul.
Gotcha. Oh yeah, and for anyone who's interested in Blackwater in Iraq, I recommend the book by Jeremy Scahill on Blackwater. It's like a good book. Or just listen to one of his interviews. If you want to know more.
Good. That's maybe a good ending. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, what's... Okay, very quick. What's out of 10? What's your review?
Out of 10. Well, I watched it the second time, because the first time I watched it in 2016.
With heart
I
in think, your eyes.
When it came out. And I wanted to watch another action drama, although there are probably plenty new ones as well.
Wow, season 2 of Vagabond is apparently confirmed. So
yes. And, well, Vagabond was a good one that we also reviewed here. So
though I'm not fond of second seasons, but we know that. Yeah, well, so what?
I'd say like 7.
Not bad.
Yeah, not too bad, because it was a good mix of action and romance, true. But we had some flaws, you know, like with the ice cream or with this kind of fashion show. That was very random.
And the stalker wives.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
How about you? You watched it because of my recommendation?
I think I really appreciate, like, I would just watch it because of Ji Jung-wook and also because of the shower scene, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's a good scene, definitely.
And, yeah, so I think I would give it also a solid 7 out of 10, I would agree.
We agree on the same.
Yeah, but only because of Ji Jung-wook. If he wouldn't be in there, it would be, like, way less. He's really pulling it out.
I can imagine. You were saying that Yuna is not the best actress. Well, we can give her a chance in her some of her newest dramas, maybe.
And actually, one last thought. I was actually also a big fan of the secretary of Yujin, Kim Dong Mi. I thought she was very cool, very badass, very.
She even kind of, what did she do? Like some crazy,
At the end, she kills the uncle. It's like she's just in a car, like, you know, putting the silencer on a pistol, and then you just like, poof, poof, and she walks off, and you're like, wow, she's a banner. She's very cool.
I thought she also cuts off some of her, I don't know, but I don't remember exactly, but yeah, there's some brutal scenes with her, definitely.
Yeah, so I liked her as well. Just wanted to say, like, big up. Kim Dong Mi, she's cool.
Both the father and the... And the mother, although Chaeyutin, the stepmother, they all had their secretaries and helpers, right? And also the whole family that we were describing in the safe house.
Yeah.
We also didn't mention them.
Here, the Umma character is the same lady
as in The Glory.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense. So but cool. It's not really the mother of anyone there.
No, but you know, she has this mothering role of cooking and whatever. I know. Anyways. Cool. So that was fun. Yeah.
See you next time.
See you next time. Stay critical, stay tuned. bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh my god, this is already the end of our episode. We hope you enjoyed it. If so, please leave us a comment or write us on Facebook or Twitter or via our email address, kdramafeuilleton@gmail.com. We are always happy to hear from our listeners, so from you, basically, be it suggestions of dramas to review or critique, of course, praise, or just wanting to say hello and have a chat about the latest goss that's going on in K-drama world. We always, always appreciate your time and opinions. Now go back to watching your dramas, stay critical, as always, and we cannot wait to see you for our next episode. Goodbye. 안녕.